Griffin, Mr. Kurnbach. Mr. Griffin, how are you doing?
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
That'll be fine.
Excellent.
Make your seat when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm David Griffin. I have the pleasure of representing Northampton County as well as the Virginia Association of Counties in this appeal from the Workers' Compensation Commission. We're asking this Court to correct a series of legal errors that kind of built up on each other, and it boils down to the Commission deciding that it was going to create an award where there wasn't one. Everything that they did wrong continued to roll from that error. And what happened there was this is a presumption case with a deputy sheriff, and the county, after taking depositions and further exploring it, determined that they would accept the underlying medical claim and circulated a stipulation to say just that. Claimant's counsel, or the claimant, I should say, declined that stipulation, asking for more than was even in the original application. Based on that failure to agree to the stipulation, it was put back on the hearing docket. Then a second application.
This keeps getting referred to as a stipulation, but it really wasn't a stipulation.
There was no stipulation.
Quite honestly, that confused me for quite a while because everybody kept referring to this as a stipulation. That's a term of art. At least as a lawyer, I always assumed that meant everybody agreed, but that's
exactly. Fairly
in the case here.
It was a
more appropriately proposed stipulation.
A proposed stipulation. That's exactly what it was. It was never agreed to at any point in time. So the claimant then filed.
I recognize that the claimant didn't. But obviously, if the claimant had accepted the stipulation when it was circulated, we would have an award to which a change in condition application would be appropriate.
Correct. And at that point, that change in condition application would be a new application that would start the whole process again, new discovery, new everything. But since we're still under the original application, the later errors that we talk about on discovery all deal with that original application. If the claimant had accepted the stipulation, under the rules, he could have gotten the same thing. He could have gone back 90 days from the application of a changing condition and still gotten the lost time had he correctly proven his case. But that didn't happen. So what Northampton has is going to an original application, a hearing on an original application, part of which is now outside the statute of limitations. So the second claim that was filed was more than 2 years after the data diagnosis. So that could have been corrected had they gotten the award from the proposed stipulation. But they chose not to do that. So that's where the errors begin to compound and begin to roll.
From the time that it notified the deputy commissioner to remove the case from the hearing docket, Northampton County's position has been that there was a compensable claim and that it accepted a compensable claim.
That's correct. However, for a full stipulation, a full agreement to have come about, a little more was needed. Things like, what is the weekly wage of the claimant? What is his indemnity rate going to be? That was never worked out. That was part of the problem. Even at the hearing on the original application, that still wasn't determined, and the record was left open for additional materials. That's what makes this so different than what the commission looked at of the Maya case and the whole concept of a de facto award. It's not. It's not even close to that type of situation. The de facto award is a situation where 2 years are going by, the claimant is receiving benefits and believes everything is okay. It's designed to protect an innocent claimant from being punished by an evil insurance company. I represent them. I'm the first to tell you there are some out there that do just that. And it's designed to protect them from that so that they're not plugging along and at 2 years and one day, oh, you didn't file your claim, you're out of luck. That's what a de facto award is designed to take care of. We don't have that here. We don't have anything close to a de facto award. So what we have is an underlying claim that after investigation was to be accepted but was not accepted. So there's no award. And then the statute of limitations runs. He files an additional application. And Northampton's position, rightly so, is that the statute is run. You can't amend your original application after 2 years and you don't have an award. Meanwhile, on the discovery side, Northampton had requested all the material that will be presented at trial on who's going to testify, what they're going to testify to. Did you market your residual skills? The answer provided after the commission ordered the claimant to fully and completely answer the question was, I've not applied anywhere else. That's it. The commission, and one of the errors that we have here is the commission says, hey, you're supposed to come back. You should have known that that answer was wrong, and you should have come back and asked us to issue another order requiring the claimant to comply with the last order that we issued. That's just not right. That's not the law. That's not reasonable or practical.
Well, even if we agree with you on that, didn't the deputy commissioner have the discretion, as frustrating as it is, to say, I'm going to allow them effectively to, on the day of the hearing, by the testimony they present, amend their discovery responses? I mean, don't our cases require us to be hyper-deferential to their interpretation of their discovery, of the party's discovery obligations?
I agree, to a point. And that's part of the issue here for y'all to decide, is to a point. The deputy has a discretion to follow the commission's precedent on what the law is on discovery, which opens up a whole new arena, which I'll come back to in a minute, on what the rules on discovery are in workers' comp. But where the case law says, and it's pretty clear case law that says, look, you got to supplement your discovery. Failure to provide the information, it will be excluded. So we say it's an abuse of that discretion for a deputy commissioner, especially the chief deputy commissioner, to take an order that he's entered and said, ignore that order. Pretend that it doesn't exist. Go get another one to say exactly the same thing, because you should have known that those answers that he gave before were wrong. Well, that would the first problem with that is, under the limited rules the commission has, is we're allowed to ask for 15 interrogatories, which have already been asked for under that original application. So we're full. Request for production of documents, we've asked for it. But the rules of the commission, although the General Assembly has told the commission to adopt rules consistent with those of the Supreme Court, they mention requests for production, but they don't actually provide for requests for production of documents. So the answer is, where is the discretion when the rules themselves aren't even clear on this, despite the General Assembly giving a very clear mandate to the commission to adopt rules like that? So our position is it's an abuse of discretion to have allowed any of that evidence. The penalty to Northampton on a violation of due process is real clear. We have no idea that this information is coming in. The point of discovery is...
Could it have been cured by saying, we'll leave the record open to allow you to do a deposition to counter anything? Would that cure the problem? Would that have cured the problem?
What has occurred in limited cases in the commission is they have continued the hearing. And that would have cured the problem, to give Northampton the opportunity, as we do in all marketing areas, to go back, talk to the people, find out did they in fact apply, further investigate and back some of that up. The first time Northampton knew of this marketing was at the hearing as it's being presented as an exhibit. So a deposition, I'm not sure, would have cured that, Your Honor, because a deposition would be, with the marketing logs he's provided, were like 35, 40 places. We don't normally take 40 depositions, but we do follow up with each one of those to see if, in fact, that happens. And it is surprising how much information you get, which is then entered into evidence is the opposition to that. So if the marketing log is to come in, if the marketing testimony is to come in, the other side rebutting that is also supposed to be allowed. That can't happen, and even the commission's own opinion of Schuller versus Payne says the very purpose of discovery is to find out what points are in contention, provide that information. Workers' compensation hearings are limited hearings. They're usually scheduled for 30 minutes. The idea is that the material is fairly fast-paced, and we're supposed to know what we got before we walk in. When the first time you discover this is at the hearing, that's prejudicial. That's a denial of the opportunity to investigate and follow that at all. So all of this comes back down to the error of the commission having decided that this proposed stipulation became an award. Had they not done that, none of this would apply. Northampton does not contest that the claimant is entitled to a medical award. Northampton does not contest at this point, now that we have reached an agreement on the average weekly wage, for the period of time in the original application. But the second application was defended on the grounds that it was presented too late, outside the statute of limitations. And I think the case law is fairly clear on that, so that we didn't have to go beyond that. Because we're at a hearing for an original application, the same discovery rules applied. I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but I think we briefed this to death. And I'll reserve my remaining time, if I may, for rebuttal.
That'll be fine. Mr. Kernbach?
But still, good morning. As you know, I represent the deputy sheriff in this case, and the easy issue to deal with is whether or not the statute of limitations really comes into play here at all.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mr. Kernbach. How do you have a stipulation that if you don't agree to it? How do you have an award based on a stipulation that not everybody's agreed to?
I think we probably should have called it a piece of paper, which ultimately would have been a stipulation had it been agreed to.
But it never was.
It never was.
And you make that very clear in your brief. Yeah. It was rejected outright. Under 652708 for a change in condition application, doesn't there have to be a pre-existing award?
No.
Doesn't the statute refer to
an award?
Right. However, there's another part of the statute, 708C, that says that if an employer takes back an employee in a light-duty capacity and pays them their regular salary, it all is part of payment of workers' compensation. So we go back to my original application, the original claim for workers' compensation benefits. So the chief deputy commissioner said, okay, we want workers' compensation wage benefits from March 9th, 2012 through the date of the hearing, which was August 14th, 2014. And we were prepared to present evidence on that. At the time of the hearing, Mr. Griffin's co-counsel stipulated to the first part of the time that the claimant was off. They stipulated that he was out of work due to heart disease from March 9th, 2012 through July, would have been 28th, 2012, and he returned to light duty work for the employer under 708C. Now, there's never been an award entered. My original application is still pending. And during the time that he was on light duty under 708C, that counts as payment of workers' compensation benefits for 24 months. So every week that goes by that he's working on light duty, another week gets subtracted from the 500 weeks. And the law, at least in my mind and the chief deputy commissioner's mind, was that there was no statute of limitations issue here. We're still there on the original application for hearing. All the dates were in play, and at the time of the hearing, there was an agreement, a stipulation. It has nothing to do with the written piece of paper that was being circulated and rejected. So in this case, the employer took the deputy back and then fired him on March 5th, 2014, saying that he couldn't accommodate him anymore in a light-duty capacity. And the whole dispute starts from that point, because I wanted to pick up the claimant under workers' compensation benefits moving forward, and we never had an agreement. So all of that has been put in play. But where there is no workers' compensation award, and you're there on your original application for hearing, and you have an uninterrupted claim for wage indemnity benefits from the beginning of the case through the date of the hearing, and you're utilizing 708C, that counts as payment of workers' compensation benefits for 24 months. The code couldn't be any clearer. And that's how we've done it for years. It's not something that's commonly encountered in workers' compensation litigation because public employers generally take their injured people back on light duty. Private employers do not. And so you get this accommodation by public employers to do that. I see you looking at your computers. Either I have totally confused the situation.
No, I'm following along with you. I'm looking at the cases you're referring to.
Yeah. So there aren't that many cases. However, you have to. There's a few, and there's the code section. So we are here on my original application for hearing. Nothing has been agreed to. So when I show up to the hearing on August 14th, 2014, I get to make a claim for everything going back backwards. From the time of March 9th, 2012 through and up to August 14th, 2014, and the contested period was basically March 6th, 2014 through August 14th, 2014. That's what we had the hearing on, and that's where the duty to market begins when the employer no longer accommodates you in a light duty position. But we were there for the whole ball of wax, and it's not that unusual for an original application for hearing using different code sections to reach back as far as you can. So you don't need to worry about the 24 months filing a change in condition application because there was no award. We were there on our original application for hearing, and that argument was rejected handily by the Chief Deputy Commissioner and the full commission. And I thought, you know, we were on solid legal ground in terms of defending the application for hearing.
All right, well, let's turn to the discovery issue.
Well, the discovery issue is one where we probably were both bad boys. I didn't update my discovery.
So we just call offsetting penalties or what?
I think the chief deputy, that's what they wrote in the full commission opinion, and they said they were unhappy with the two of us.
Well, I am puzzled by the Northampton's a bad boy. They ask you an interrogatory for the witnesses you're going to call at the hearing.
Right.
Okay, you're saying it's all the same application because we are having a
right.
De facto award under 708C. You show up at the hearing with witnesses that you did not identify.
That's true. Based on what happened after March 6th of 2014, and the Chief Deputy Commissioner said when I filed my second application for hearing, basically saying that the claimant wasn't accommodated anymore. The Chief Deputy Commissioner said both of you had a duty to either propound interrogatory for the new issues or update it.
Why? I've asked you, who are you calling as a witnesses at the hearing in this case? What other interrogatory do I need to ask you to be entitled to know the witnesses you're going to call at the hearing in this case? What secondary interrogatory do I have to give you?
Well, if you look at the email exchange between Mr. Griffin and I...
That's not my question. My question is, what other interrogatory... You're saying the Chief Deputy Commissioner said he should have sent additional interrogatories. What other interrogatory could I possibly craft that wouldn't entitle me to the information that the outstanding what witnesses are you going to call would have entitled me to? What change do I have to make? Do I have to send an interrogatory saying, have you changed your mind? Or are you calling additional witnesses? Or, I mean, doesn't what witnesses aren't you going to call entitle me to know what witnesses you're going to call?
Well, the claimant was always going to be a witness. And the testimony about marketing was always in play because they fired him. So they knew that marketing was going to in play the day they fired him. And the only other witness that testified at the hearing was the sheriff.
I thought there was a discovery response that says there was no marketing.
Well, that was their defense. In the beginning, there was a discovery response that says there was no marketing because he was still on the payroll in the sheriff's department, so he was out of work.
And you never supplemented that and said he's marketing now?
No, because that simply wasn't done after March 6th of 2014. Because, again, there were other issues about whether or not the claim was accepted or not, and at the last minute... we didn't subpoena the sheriff until like July of 2014, and I never got any communication from Mr. Griffin about why is the sheriff coming. And even the sheriff didn't know why he was there, and his testimony was really about sick leave and no
Sounds
longer.
Like you didn't tell anybody anything.
Well, I told him enough to defend the case, at least at the beginning part of the case, but I think it was within the discretion of the Chief Deputy Commissioner as well as the full commission to make these rulings. And the fact of the matter remains is he could have asked for a continuance, saying, I'm so prejudiced here, I got to leave. And, I might not have objected. I might have objected. It didn't make any difference. But he didn't ask for a continuance. And so if you don't ask for a continuance because you believe you're prejudiced, then you've waived the prejudice by going forward.
But doesn't the continuance benefit you? Because the real remedy, if you haven't supplemented your answers or even given an answer, is to exclude any evidence that hasn't otherwise been provided in discovery. And then your remedy is getting a continuance so you don't have your case eviscerated.
Right, but I was ready to anticipate a marketing defense because they had terminated him, and everybody who represents workers' compensation claimants who get fired and they still have restrictions to work knows the first day they got to be marketing. But if he didn't ask for continuance, it wouldn't have benefited me because I was ready to do the case from A to Z.
But do you agree that you had an obligation to provide supplemental responses as we went along?
Yeah.
You didn't. Your only argument is the deputy commissioner had the discretion to not penalize me for my failure.
Yes.
Okay.
But if you want an honest answer, that's an honest answer.
Better than the other kind.
Exactly.
Right. However, because the chief deputy commissioner was unhappy with the both of us still arguing about discovery issues. I mean, in the record, you could see there's subpoenas that were, you know, complained about. But not once is there a letter from Mr. Griffin or his office asking me to update his discovery responses. You'll see a bunch of emails from me about discovery issues.
Well, I haven't already obtained an order from the commission that you're supposed to provide him the responses that you didn't provide him when you were supposed to provide them with even before all of this happened. I would...
Well, the chief deputy commissioner said you should have asked again.
Plus the duty to supplement's incumbent upon you without a reminder from Mr. Griffin, correct?
Yes.
So why does he need to send you a reminder to do what you're already under obligation to do?
Well, this case developed rather oddly because of this alleged agreement in the beginning. And so when the discovery was responded to, when the case was still contested, we thought all the issues had been settled. It wasn't until after he was terminated in 2014 those issues developed so quickly, and there was no communication from Mr. Griffin. And the chief deputy commissioner said, if you're going to complain about discovery, write me a letter, bring it to my attention, file a motion to compel. And it so it went through the hands of the chief deputy commissioner and three full commissioners at the Workers' Compensation Commission. And Mr. Griffin could have asked at the full commission to have vacated the issues about marketing and sent it back to the chief deputy commissioner for a new hearing on that evidence. But what really happened here is, you know, all they were going to do is cross-examine the claimant about how hard he was looking for work. You know, they don't have any other evidence other than you didn't look hard enough. I mean, their complaint in the brief was, you know, the standard for looking for work wasn't met under the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission standards. But they're just guidelines. They're not legal standards. And you have to ask Mr. Griffin, what would you have done differently if we showed up 3 weeks later with a stack of places that he looked for work? The only thing he would have done is cross-examined him, and his co-counsel was there, looked at the exhibit, and cross-examined him anyway.
Well, he gets to make that choice based on discovery being supplemented beforehand, doesn't he?
Whether right.
He can then conduct the analysis. Well, is it worth me trying to bring in somebody, or can I just handle it on cross-examination? But it's difficult for you to make any assessment of that if you're ambushed with it.
Well, that defense of marketing was always there, staring at him in the face as well as me. And if he was prejudiced...
But if it's staring everybody in the face, and you have an outstanding... and their outstanding discovery request, isn't the logical answer, if it's staring everybody in the face, that you answer the discovery?
Exactly. And
you didn't.
I did not.
So I don't understand how the everybody should have known that this was going to be an issue helps you, given you're the party who didn't answer the discovery about it.
Well,
explain to me how that helps you.
The only thing that helps me is the arguments were fully vetted in front of the chief deputy commissioner and the full commission of the Workers' Comp Commission. And we don't look at cases in such minutiae and say that we've been prejudiced with it when the ultimate outcome would have been the same. And so you have a statute of limitations argument and you have a marketing defense. And the real issue is, what would he have done differently? And I understand, you know, the court's concern about he might have been prepared to bring another witness or whatever, but the issue of marketing was still fully vetted by the full commission before the deputy commissioner and the full commission. He wouldn't have done anything differently. We're in Eastville, Virginia. There's nothing out there in terms of alternative employment for a deputy sheriff, and he looked as hard as he could. That's all they would have done. But the bottom line here is, if Mr. Griffin's client was so prejudiced by showing up, they have an equal opportunity to make a motion for a continuance. And if you don't, and you don't lay the basis for it, you've waived it, and you've waived your the deficiencies in the discovery responses. I don't think it rises to the level of a constitutional due process argument, because courts deal with this all the time. And you know, I'm honestly conceding that I was deficient in my discovery responses. And you know, I'm not going to throw a rock at Mr. Griffin, but you can read the full commission's opinion that they were unhappy with the both of us. That's all I can say. And while it may cause you some concern, you know, it was an issue dealt with by the full commission, and obviously Mr. Griffin and I have learned our lesson anyway.
All right, Mr. Kornbach, thank you. Your time is up. Mr. Griffin?
Thank you. Very briefly, if I may, to address some of the things that were raised up. As to a request for an additional continuance, you'll see in page 86 of the appendix that the Chief Deputy Commissioner issued an order saying there will be no additional continuances granted. This was just before the hearing was scheduled. So when he's pretty adamant about that and goes into detail as to why, it's you're not going to buck a judge that's telling you you've already had three continuances. You're not going to get another one. And he's telling us to move forward. As to what we would have done differently on the marketing issue, I think we were very clear about that. We would have investigated and, in fact, do investigate all the marketing information that is provided. And then we choose whether or not we're going to bring in the witnesses from the employer, the alleged employer the person says that they had applied for a job at. We do that all the time. The other side of that, though, is quite frequently we go to hearing where there is no marketing evidence. Our position is we were entitled to rely on the answer and presumed it was true, because it's not uncommon. Mr. Kornbach may be the exception to that, but we haven't had that many cases together yet to actually see he always brings one in. I was not aware of that. I want to go back to the statute of limitations issue. I agree with part of what Mr. Kornbach says about 708C, but he's leaving out the most important part of that. The first part of that statute still requires there must be an award. There must be an award in place. The code is clear. The award must be in place first, some type of an award. So we don't have that. That allows the 708C language allows where there's an award and somebody goes for back to, for example, as a teacher for a short period of time, and they couldn't lift heavy objects any longer. And there's an aide put in the classroom for that teacher. So they're not technically at their full-duty job. Can they go for 16 months without making another claim? Yeah. That continues to extend that application out for those people for that purpose, for coming back on what 708 is all about, a change in condition. The language is clear. It's where you're modifying an existing award or order. You don't have that here. Mr. Kornbach's client didn't have that, so there's the 708C never applies without that award.
Well, except it says that wages paid in the circumstance that who's returned, who's provided work with in his capacity at a wage equal to or greater than his pre-injury wage.
Right.
We agree that happened.
We agree that happened.
All right. Shall be considered compensation paid pursuant to an award. So it's considered compensation paid pursuant to an award. Does that make it an award?
Our argument is it does not make it an award. Because in
the, tell me why.
Because in the other cases that talk about 708C, something happened first. Something happened first. A stipulation for granting an acceptance of a claim, some type of an award, something was in place already. Something was already.
That may well be the case, but I don't think that answers Judge Russell's question, which is that's what the statute says. Why isn't the phrase, is and I won't try to quote it from memory, he's looking right at it, but why isn't that equate to an award? If you pay wages, and it's supposed to be considered as if an award had been made for
right.
the payment of those wages. Why isn't that the functional equivalent of an award?
I honestly can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that. That's for mine's much brighter than mine to answer. I'm not going to try and lead the court down a garden path when I don't know the answer to that.
And I'll concede Mr. Kornbach didn't quote the deemed as an award in his brief, but that's the important part of the statute.
Yeah. I can't answer that. I'll leave that to greater minds than me. But nevertheless, even if, just for the sake of argument, if we say there's an award out there and this is still the original application, then our argument remains that the claimant shouldn't be getting lost time benefits because of the failure to provide the information from discovery. Further, the error is compounded by, as we pointed out in the brief, Even the claimant admitted he had gone back to work. He'd earned just a very small amount of money compared to his previous salary, but we couldn't even get a credit for that. The answer is as if nothing ever happened. Just give this claimant what he's asking for. These are the continuing errors. It was just almost like the commission was determined to rule on behalf of this particular party. We would ask that you sustain the commission's ruling on the award of a medical benefit. We agree with that, but we ask that you do reverse his award for lost time benefits for all the reasons set forth both today in argument and in our briefs. Any other questions I can answer for the court?
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. We'll come down and recount.